Now, you say it's a path to Celtic ritual. Mm-hmm. So that sort of implies that there's lots of ways of doing this.
Yes. Again, the book was not an attempt at dictating to people, well, you know, if you follow this path, you're really, this is real true Celtic tradition, and you're doing it right, and any other way is wrong. No, I was saying that this is what Celtic tradition is like. You know, if you...
Oh, there's a wealth of history.
Right. I try and give the historical background. I try and give an anthropological and folklore background as to what life has been like in traditional Celtic communities.
And you do have a PhD in anthropology, which...
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
No, I have I studied anthropology. I have a BA in anthropology.
Oh, BA.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't have a PhD. I never did a doctoral program. I did pursue a program of studies in Celtic studies in Paris at the Hautes Études, and I certainly spent a lot of time living in Celtic-speaking communities and studying Celtic languages and the traditions associated with them. So then I sort of give you this information, and then I say, well, here are several ways in which you can use this by associating with this tradition, by immersing yourself in this tradition, by gaining a greater and greater understanding of it. And here are some ways in which you can use the meaning of these rituals to create rituals of your own.
How do you know that the rituals that you give so much detail about in the Apple Branch are accurate?
Well, the rituals are from observation. I mean, the rituals are rituals that exist, that you can look them up in books on anthropology and folklore.
Oh, okay. It's not like that these things were lost and have recently been found.
No, not at all. No, what I'm doing is I'm providing a framework in which I'm bringing all of this together, which is something that hasn't been done to a really developed extent. And I'm also presenting it as relevant to the here and now. That is, these rituals are not just quaint things that people did and that really have no relevance to us now. And I try to explain what these rituals were supposed to mean and how they can still be meaningful when we put ourselves from the point of view of what those rituals were trying to accomplish, that they can still accomplish precisely the same thing in our modern framework.
It's 10:29. This is WBAI FM 99.5 in New York City. And when you recreate Celtic ritual, you go in it by the seasons. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot. Now, right now, this is the day before St. Patrick's Day. It's a few days before the spring equinox. St. David's Day is coming out.
It was last week.
I thought it was next week.
Actually, the week before that.
We have Easter coming up. And you talk a lot about those holidays and the roots of them. Mm-hmm. Let's go into detail since it's so timely right now.
Which one?
It's
being the spring holidays.
Well, all the spring holidays. You've sort of put them as if all the holidays I just mentioned come from the same root.
They do, probably. Now, we don't know that the Celts actually did anything around the time of the spring equinox. That's sort of a modern convention. And in the Christian, the church calendar, that became Lady Day, Feast of the Annunciation. So it's probable that there was some sort of celebration of spring in Western Europe around that time, because most Marial holidays that feature the Virgin Mary, are residues of festivals that honored the land goddess of a particular area. There were agricultural festivals in which the land goddess was honored, and usually when these festivals were Christianized, Mary was put in place of the land goddess, but the spirit of the festival remained essentially the same. And in the Celtic calendar, of course, the two major holidays that sort of frame spring are Imolc, which is was Christianized as Candlemas, and which is the beginning of February, and was the holiday that was sacred to the goddess Brige, or became Saint Bridget. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is before spring actually flowers. It's the first kindling of the fire of spring in the depths of the earth, and it happens when it's still cold on the surface. And then the festival that frames it at the other end, which is Bealtaine, which is the beginning of May, May Day, which is really the flowering of summer, the sort of the culmination of spring, when everything is now on the surface, everything is manifest, the earth is blooming, and everything is set to grow and reproduce. Somewhere midway between these periods, we have the equinox, and we We don't know how it was commemorated in the Celtic world, or if we don't have the name of a Celtic festival that would have anything to do with that. But we do have spring festivals around that time that tended to gravitate towards saints' holidays. And, you know, we have St. David's Day, March 1st in Wales. We have St. Patrick's Day, March 17th in Ireland. Mm-hmm. We have St. Piran's Day, March 5th in Cornwall. So there's the impression that, and all of these are not just national holidays as they've become, you know, honoring the country, but they have a certain earthy quality to them as well, that you're celebrating the season as well as celebrating a saint or celebrating an ethnic identity.
Well, there's a well-known corporation known for its watery beer and conservative politics. It's really pushing the whole St. Patrick chase the snakes out of Ireland.
Yeah, that's very silly. Well, I mean, it's a popular story, and
yeah.
It's sort of been pushed by you know, Catholic schools and places like that, where you sort of teach children the story of St. Patrick, and that's sort of a picturesque thing you can throw in. It's actually not an old story at all. The first mention of it is sometime in the 12th century as a sort of explanation of why there are no snakes in Ireland. And it's sort of presented as a joke. You know, St. Patrick threw them out. That's why there are no snakes in Ireland. Even though classical writers already pointed out that there were no snakes in Ireland. And the Irish writers of the Middle Ages were perfectly aware of those previous sources talking about the absence of snakes in Ireland. So it's not like it was an issue that people really believed that St. Patrick drove them out. There's a common modern neo-pagan myth that says that the snakes were druids. That's not true either. You know, a lot of people saying, well, yeah, it's just code word for the druids that Patrick forced out of Ireland. But no, that's not true either. That's just a modern myth that has been repeated so often that people treat it as fact now.
Uh-huh.
The origin of the story was probably that a lot of the pre-Christian myths that dealt with the relationship between the tribe and the land in the early Celtic world and in Ireland dealt with how a culture hero subdued the powers of the earth that are chaotic and that are dangerous for human survival, that are represented by a snake, a giant snake, a giant serpent of some sort. And there are a lot of these sort of either serpent slaying or serpent subduing stories that originally involved a god or a hero. Lu, of course, who is the great sort of culture hero, god of the Celts, played that role in many traditions. But during the Middle Ages, as these traditions were gradually Christianized, very often a local saint would be put in the role of the pagan hero or the god and would do exactly the same thing.
Right.
But the name would have changed. And St. Patrick was put in that role, certainly in the legend of Crochfarach, of the mountain that has since become sacred to St. Patrick and is the focus of the pilgrimage of St. Patrick in Mayo. Here, Patrick is put in the role of the one who did the serpent slaying, the Cuirenach, the evil dragon, female dragon,
nice.
That is the chaotic power of the land. And so, and then in other places where Patrick often absorbed the roles of lesser-known local saints, as later in the Middle Ages, the Roman Church, because it considered St. Patrick to be one of their own, and it was sort of nervous about the very independent nature of Irish Christianity and the fact that a lot of the saints and the monasteries and so forth that were institutions in Irish Christian culture couldn't really be given a very confident Roman pedigree. So they really wanted to push St. Patrick because they knew that he was related to the Roman Church in some clear way. And so they pushed Patrick everywhere. And
so
very often Patrick absorbed other traditions.
So they not only co-opted pagan deities, but also...
yes, earlier Christian traditions.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. So the idea of Patrick killing snakes or subduing snakes came from his being identified with these earlier traditions. And again, the idea that he drove the snakes out of Ireland as an explanation for why there are no snakes there is sort of a very late sort of throwaway concept that was really a joke to start with. And then that in more modern times got to be part of the St. Patrick legend as it was standardized.
Yeah.